Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence.
In South Africa, the month of June is celebrated as Youth Month, in remembrance of the youth who lost their lives during the Soweto Uprising on the 16th of June, 1976. This year, today, 16th of June, 2016, is the 40th anniversary of this occasion, which will be commemorated under the theme Youth Moving South Africa Forward. Our youth require many components to move our nation forward, but arguably one element stands out above the rest, and that is education. Therefore, in recognition of the positive effects of education, Womanity has compiled a special program that features extracts from previous guests who have demonstrated the impact that education has had on their lives and how South Africa has advanced as a result of it. We commence the program with former South Africa Minister Buyelwa Sonjiko, sharing her views on how education has progressed in South Africa and the impact education has on women regarding their economic independence and ability to fend for themselves and look after their children.
Well, I could say today we have covered a lot of ground in terms of ensuring quality education. You will appreciate that when we took over the country, we had a big challenge of unifying or integrating education. We had about 17 systems.
As many as that,
divided along racial lines, but also that would include the homelands that were meant to balkanize our country and take the African people to those parts of the country. So you had such a huge problem of having one education system, which is still a challenge today. But I think we've done very well in our attempt to integrate education. But also the fact that there were townships in the country, again, there was that balkanization where black people were living in the townships. And the infrastructure in the townships was not up to scratch in comparison to the infrastructure in other areas. And again, you had to make sure that you equip those schools to bring them up to the level of the other areas, so that the quality of education that would come from those schools would almost be at the same level with the other schools in the country, so that a South African graduate, black or white, would be the same quality. Of course, we're not there yet, but we have moved towards achieving or realizing that dream. So education, there's still more that we need to do. We had predicted when we were writing the RDP, Reconstruction and Development Program, we had predicted that it would take us about 25 years to correct our education system.
From 1994,
but I'm not sure if in 25 years we will have achieved. I think it looks like it will take even longer, because we still have challenges.
Well, it's an ongoing process, because when you start something 25 years ago, there's so many unknowns to predict into the future.
Exactly. But I think if we put extra effort, all of us, all players, parents, mothers, teachers, teachers' unions, government, if we all work together, I think the issue here that becomes very important is collective leadership. If all of those players could continue to lead in ensuring that we have quality education in our country for all, and really that's what we're aspiring for, we can achieve that aspiration.
And I think that's an important point that you raise, because often I think people, that they have their children, they send them away to school or they send them away to university, and the education becomes the school's issue or the university's issue, outsourcing the education issue as opposed to looking at it as a responsibility as a parent for their children.
It's a very important point, but we also need to appreciate that the majority in our society themselves could not get the education that was so important for them to make decisions of the kind that you are raising. And there were other priorities. I mean, a mother who is in poverty in the far-flung areas of Kinglumstown would not think about going to school and looking after her child and what her child is achieving at school if there's no food for that child. So priorities also for other women are different. If you're an educated woman, then you firstly, you are independent economically, you can fend for yourselves and your family, and that part of the challenge is taken off from your plate. Then you are able to look at other very important things and even appreciate the importance of education.
Next, Minister of Basic Education, Angie Moshekwa, reflects on the value of education as a vital tool to empower individuals and societies. She remarks on the impact patriarchy has had on gender roles, resulting in a knock-on effect where women end up managing multiple responsibilities, and in so doing, many compromise their education. Additionally, Minister Moshekwa stresses the need for girls to break out of their comfort zones, to pursue studies in science, technology, economics, and mathematics streams.
You know, I always admire South Africans generally from every racial group that we have. When I compare them to other groups or other communities in the continent. But even when I grew up, my mother used to tell me that your education, your certificate is your husband. It's difficult out there if you're a woman. If you don't have a certificate, you're just as naked as anything. So if just get married first to education, then you can see the rest. So most communities do value education. You find that in our, if you look at our enrollment rates, you don't have a difference between girls being held at home. It's only in poor communities where I think poverty begins to bite and gender roles begin to creep in that girls get compromised. So that when a mother leaves a rural area to come and work as a domestic worker in the urban areas, the girl child is made to now take the mother's role of looking after all the other kids. It compromises her studies. Our statistics show us that girl children in the lower grades outsmart the boys. They outsmart them also because in education we know that if you start giving your kids responsibility from an early age, it also is an advantage for them. So that social, those roles that they give girls at an early age help them to even perform better than boys because they're responsible, they are focused, they are time management. They are quieter in classrooms, they're not playful, they grow quicker. So it helps them to really become better students in the lower grades. But in the higher grades, when these boys start maturing, developing, and they have no other burdens. They don't have to cook for anybody. They don't have to pick anybody from the crash. They don't have to do anybody's
watching.
Where
they can focus.
They can focus. Then they do better than the girls. But what is also nice in our system when you count statistics, because girls continue being irresponsible, they stay longer than boys. The boys drop out at a higher rate. And we can see your prison population, your youth criminality. When poverty begins to bite, boys... Because there's just not that moral strength to stay on, they drop quicker. So we have higher registration of girls up to matric, but the performance of boys who stay is higher than the girls. So they're not burdened by anything. They can read. They have their boys' room. Even outside rooms in the country, they call them boys' room. So boys have got their space, they've got their room, they've got their beds, they've got their time. So, and you can see where these problems creep in, that it's all around patriarchy. How the roles are defined and how it impacts on them. And they take, unfortunately, your softer subjects sometimes, which when they have to go to tertiary, find that courses choose them. They can't choose the courses they have to go into. I always say it's also being responsible. Do not want to take chances. Girls are very careful and cautious, are brought up to be careful. They will take your mental lead, they will take all things which they know are safe. When they go to tertiary, that's the analysis we did last year when we went to the NGC. Girls, they take your soft skills like teaching and other things. These are less paying jobs. Boys would have taken your medicine, science, they become engineers, your doctors, your actual scientists.
So following the STEM streams.
Yeah, and then they get into higher paying jobs.
Staying with the basic education sector, Mrs. Zulekwe Lobelo, principal of Alexander High School, tells us why she became a teacher and her mission to impact on learners' lives for them to go on to contribute to South Africa's economy. She emphasizes the role that high school has on girls, encouraging them to take science and mathematics subjects in order to become professionals in fields like commerce or engineering.
Doctor, you know, education has liberated us as women. And I'm proud to say I'm a manager and a leader because of education and our democracy with the constitution of the country. Historically, remember, the apartheid government would give us certain careers, nursing, teaching, and police. So for me, I fell in love with education. I felt it's a place where I can touch many lives, because whatever I'm doing there, I know it cannot be easily erased. So I make an impact to one learner, and in turn, that learner will make an impact to the world. But if things can go wrong, I've messed up the life of this learner, and this learner will also not contribute positively to the nation. And I also understand that education, really, it's a marriage certificate. I want to agree with the minister. No one can take it away from you. And it has empowered us as women. Although there are still challenges of stereotypes, but with education, I feel I am touching the whole world, because it's where I'm grooming learners so that they can be better and contribute positively to the economy of the country. You see, high school is a site for the girls and boys to be empowered. But girls are vulnerable than boys. And high school should guide these learners, especially the girls, in terms of subject choices. There were subjects that were meant for boys, but it's a matter of now guiding them to go to those science streams so that we can get engineers, to go to those commerce subjects with pure maths, because they run away from maths. They also want to be there in a comfort zone. So it's a matter of giving guidance, especially in a transition from grade 9 to grade 10 when they are choosing subjects. I think the high school must make sure that those girls are choosing right subjects there. And also empowering them with life skills so that they can make informed decisions. Because, as I'm saying, they are vulnerable. They are in a position to make wrong decisions. Unwanted pregnancies, for example. Finding themselves being used by older people because they are doing these things for certain gains. So we need to make sure that we empower them with life skills. We need to make sure that they choose subjects, and we also empower them with self-confidence. They must believe that they can succeed in life. They must believe that they can be role model. They must also believe that they can also go to other spheres of life and do wonders.
Moving from high school to university, Professor Irma Eloff, Dean of the Faculty of Education at the University of Pretoria, shares some of the challenges that teachers face and reinforces the positive effects that education has on women, not only for themselves, but also for their families.
The recent research findings have been very heartening because, like you rightly say, the investment in girls' education have positive benefits across the board, from health indicators to even economic indicators, starting with the family. You know, the studies that we've seen with the likelihood of a child surviving with a mother being educated, it just increases dramatically when a mother gains access to education and becomes...
Yeah, and those are elaborated on quite heavily with the Millennium Development Goals with
exactly,
their achievements.
Yes, so that kind of investment we know will yield positive results, and certainly we should continue on this path. And we've done groundbreaking work there as well. I think the education sector at the moment is a very dynamic sector. It has a lot of challenges. So I think that then translates inadvertently to challenges that's gendered as well. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of dysfunction that needs to be addressed and that is being addressed. But that responsibility often comes down on the teachers. And they may be at a place where they have... the need, or in a life phase where they have the need for more flexibility, or they may even be put in positions of responsibility that may be a little bit early in their career. So I think there's a lot of the circumstances of the education sector that then manifests in challenges for women. I think there are several challenges. There's this concept called stereotype susceptibility, where, you know, there's been studies that shows that when girls are reminded of their gender just before taking a mathematics test, then they actually perform worse. And this has been empirically tested. So what we're trying to do at the faculty is to break those stereotypes and to break those preconceived ideas about girls' performance in maths and science, for instance. And some of our strongest students are in those fields. They win the awards, they are at graduation ceremonies, standing there in front of everyone with their gowns. So I think the only way to address those stereotypical thinking is to create actual evidence that shows the contrary. There are also other barriers in that women don't necessarily easily talk about their own achievements. And I think with girls being humble often, not talking about what they are good at, some of the literature in gender studies have shown that there's a trade-off between likability and girls talking about their achievements. They have to decide, do they talk about their achievement or do they still want to be liked?
Next, former South African Minister Toko Didiza comments on the benefits of tertiary education and explains how she continues to enroll in programs, self-fulfilling her philosophy of lifelong learning.
The statistics that we're looking at in terms of tertiary education and the access, both for men and women, and the performance, it indicates that we've got more women, firstly in terms of entry, but also even their performance has actually increased. My sense is that what our government has done, particularly giving more support to basic education to make sure that you capture a lot of young people into schooling, is a very important one. But beyond that, given our socioeconomic situation as a country, to actually have support, you know, like having food at school, you know, school nutrition, in my view, has been a very important and an added benefit to ensure that you can have more and more children in school. At a tertiary level, the support in terms of NSFAS, I know there's a complaint that it's not enough, but it has actually gone a long way to ensure that children who come from disadvantaged communities who wouldn't have been able to access tertiary education today, they are able to do it. And what I found interesting is that where a majority of women have actually gone through schooling and tertiary schooling level, they actually would educate their siblings. I'm not saying men don't do it, but in majority you'll find that a lot of women will do that to make sure that a lot of their siblings would actually benefit from their own education to be able to actually get through to school. And a majority of women put emphasis into education. I mean, in their budget, they would do everything else, but they would make sure that school needs are the first that are met, you know, in the household.
A priority for her children.
So for me, I think as a country, we have done what we could. We could still do more, you know, to ensure that we encourage more and more people to make sure that they actually take education seriously. Not just for themselves alone, but also for the contribution into their society. You raised an important issue about I continued studying even while I was a minister. I mean, part of the reality is that I believe in lifelong learning because things change. If you look at the world today, it wasn't like when I was growing up. But also, if you look at technology, technology changes very quickly. And these are the applications you have to utilize in your working environment. So you have to develop yourself. Otherwise, you would be redundant in the work environment. For me, it was also about decision making. I mean, I was a deputy minister in agriculture, which is an economic sector. So how would I have coped if I didn't empower myself in understanding, you know, economics? informing yourself about the sector in which you have to operate in, expand your knowledge of it. If you are in a decision-making position, it enables you to look at things differently. Because while your professionals within that environment will empower you with knowledge, will give you the necessary recommendation, you must also be able to have an independent mind to reflect on the issues, because you don't only looking at the administrative or the technical issues, but you also have to have the balance in terms of the political issues, not just in your local environment, but globally, and be able to say, what will the impact of this decision be today, not only for South Africa, but also the interlinkages that are there between what we do and what is happening outside. So it became important then, it becomes important even now in the area where I'm in.
Sometimes there is a tendency to think of education in purely academic terms. I asked award-winning musician Dr. Sibongile Khumalo about the role of arts education. Listen to her perspective of its broad applicability in respect of life skills.
That's a question that always gets me into trouble because I get so angry. There's a lot of lip service that's paid to the education of our children generally. There's very little arts education in our schools for our children. And I think part of the challenge with that, in particular with regards to arts education, is that arts has been seen as we talk of creative industries now, we don't talk of arts. Because our country is embroiled in so many social issues, right? Every sphere, every aspect of our development, of our education, is linked to social development and how we create jobs for people.
There's an economic aspect.
There's always an economic, yes. There's always an economic impetus to things I do. And that's okay, I suppose. That's necessary.
I have to say, though, on what you've said to me in terms of the community involvement, the way that being in a choir forces you to listen to other people, it has that community connection. It's got a bonding effect. And I, until this conversation now, I've never thought of music in that way. I've never thought about that type of connection, which so vividly has come through in the conversation.
Arts education is a life skill. It's about empowering children. It's about equipping children with an ability to do certain things. There are studies, anecdotal evidence of how when 14, 15-year-olds are exposed to music education in this particular instance, they develop a cognitive understanding of so many other things. The critical thing here also that we need to keep in mind, Dr. Malka, is that when a child is taught, say, a song, they have a need to stand on that stage in front of their peers and do well, right? There's no way you're going to stand there and make a fool of yourself. You cannot. If
Absolutely.
You're an actor, if you're a dancer, if you're a painter, you want to be seen to do well. And you go there to do well. And that experience translates to other school subjects. So a child who does well in music will do well in mathematics, will do well in science. I know this. I saw this with my own peers, with the kids I grew up with.
They have confidence.
They have confidence to go out there, to stand out there and be okay with themselves, with what they're doing. But importantly, they strive for excellence. And that's one of the big benefits of arts education. They understand what it means to be an achiever. They understand also what it means to be a thinker, because you need to find solutions to how to get these results, mm-hmm. right? What we are churning out are not thinkers, we're churning out artisans, and there's nothing wrong with that. The artisans, we need artisans, but not everybody is going to be an artisan. Not everybody thinks that way. Not everybody understands that 1 + 1 = 2. Many of us understand that, 1 + 1 = 2, but perhaps you can put it differently. You can, instead of putting the numbers parallel to each other, how about you put them at an angle. What does that give you? It's not true. It's not quite 11. So the mind expands.
You're so right. We've been limited by this linear thinking, totally. Which means that you cannot derive new solutions if you're going through in a blinkered approach.
And that's what arts education does.
Moving from one South African musical great to another, award-winning Afro-soul singer Lyra tells us how education affected her life and the applications of these skills to the growth and financial well-being of her business.
In the simplest terms, education refines the mind. It is so important to have a sense of completion in terms of your academic studies. Believe it or not, you will always use it. It will refine your mind, it will train your sense of reasoning and your logic, and it's a tool that you will always use. Nobody can take that away. It's knowledge that you acquire, and you will use it one way or another. So it is important. Once you've started it, I urge you to complete it. What I recognize now is one might think finance and music aren't even related, but oh my word, I've discovered that the process of doing one's books, for example, it teaches you to investigate solutions. It teaches you to think logically and systematically. And now, it's the beautiful thing about life is that once you learn a certain thing in one area, it becomes a ripple effect in other areas of your life.
So transferable skills?
Completely.
And I think this helps you looking in terms of a bottom line on what you're doing, what your outputs are, and what your inputs are.
For the first time, you're actually able to make sense of that. What am I giving in and what's coming out? You learn to balance your life as you balance your balance sheet. You begin to take responsibility for what you're doing with your money. I actually even wrote a song called Miley, and I discuss it at every concert, that people complain about they work, but they always talk about how they don't have money. Truth is, you have money, but you're spending it frivolously, and you cannot account for what you did with your money. And then you throw your hands up and say, oh, I don't have money. If you sit and account and take responsibility for what you are actually doing with your money, you'll recognize how much waste you actually go through. So for me, being able to account taught me long ago to be careful what I do with my money. And especially with, as a musician, you tend to live from hand to mouth. You receive your money this week, and then you do a whole bunch of things. By the end of the month, you're not really sure where it's all gone, but you remember receiving the money. And I learned a very important skill that I suppose nobody will teach you at school, but it works beautifully when you're a musician. Don't touch that money. Rather pay yourself a salary and be disciplined to live within those means. And education enabled me to even think that way. So then you start to see it's a useful tool that nobody can take away from you.
Moshidi Mashekwa, renowned figure in the South African arts industry, reinforces the value of education in order to remain a relevant player in whatever career you choose.
You did your Bachelor of Arts degree in English and History, and your honors in African literature, and you've continued to educate yourself within your trade. And as such, you know that education is a vital tool to empower individuals and societies. Can you expand a little on achieving your academic qualification, which I'm sure your mom contributed to, being a principal, but especially to our young girls who may be at a crossroads in their life and not certain about the role of an academic degree in their future?
You know, it's so easy to say to somebody, if you've got talent, you learn on the job. But what we don't tell people is that you will get older. You will change. You will want other things in your life. You'll want stability. You'll want sanity. You'll want to wake up and just know what is going on in your life. You know, you'll want to get married, you want to settle down. All sorts of things will come along your way. And that's when I think an education will kick in. But even before then, you will have to read a contract. You will have to know what you're committing to on paper. And if you cannot read a contract properly, you're basically entrusting your life in other people's hands. You'll have to make decisions about what it is you really want to do. We are in an environment where there are so many people telling you who you should be, how you should be, We have social media, which plays a huge part in what we do, more and more. But you're not going to be able to sift through the real things and the unnecessary if you don't have that cultivated sense of questioning, which is what education gives you, critically looking at what has been presented to you, and coming to a conclusion that comes from your own truth.
Also to do with thinking,
yeah,
for yourself,
thinking.
And not being passive. Because as you mentioned, in terms of the influence and the effects of social media, we're bombarded with sources of information, but often it's at a very shallow, superficial level.
Very shallow, superficial level. And if you're going to grow in this business, you're going to constantly be doing self-work. I call it self-work. You know, you're going to have to be asking, what is it I want? Who do I want to be? And those things come with a cultivated sense of reading makes you spend time with yourself and the others. It creates that thinking being in you, you know. It's a muscle that you're basically exercising on a regular. It teaches you to have opinions. It teaches you to question. It's a career that needs a real rigorous sense of intellect, actually. We often underestimate that.
It's being dedicated to not just your craft, but to taking responsibility for the world around you.
Yep.
And to remain relevant in an environment that is constantly changing. And if anything, I think, is changing at an accelerated rate.
Yep.
Sharing an international perspective, CEO and founder of BBES International, Basila Bokoko, stresses the influence of role models on a child's education. Whether it's the passive absorption of learnings from nurturing parents or actively reading about successful world leaders and adopting their attributes.
Well, I think that this is basically the truth. When mother is educated, she wants the kids to be educated. My mother is a nurse, and I think that I saw her work. So she was also my role model, because a lot of kids in my class, the mothers didn't work, but I never felt abandoned because my mother was working. Actually, I admire that she loved her job and she had a passion, because she became a nurse just because she really wanted to take care of the patient, having this passion for her job. And also, my father is a lawyer, and I grew up with books and seeing him preparing his cases and everything. And I think it's very important for the parents to see that if they really want to push their kids to have education, the kids are going to always mimic who you are.
And did you find that with your dad, he was an influence for you to pursue aspects of a legal career?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was a huge influence for me. And it's very interesting, because when I was little, if you ask me what I want to study, I would say, I want to become a nurse and a lawyer, because I didn't want to upset any of my parents and I wanted to make them happy both. And I didn't realize until I finished what I wanted really to do. And it was when I was doing the MBA, when I come across marketing international and international trade, and I said, this is really my call. The more exposed you are to different areas, and that's what I always been, I've been encouraging young people to read and see, because I studied law and it was very easy to study, but it wasn't my passion. It was because I thought I could get a job, and this is what my parents really thought. And economics, it was also because I was not able to make a decision. I said it could be a big combination, and I found this program in the CEU San Pablo that they put together both degrees, and you just have extra work, but you could finish both. But I also believe that the biographies I read about women who made it, and I remember at that time Margaret Thatcher, Benazir Bhutto in Pakistan. I mean, I saw women with huge role models, and they were PhDs, and they had a lot of education. So I think that also helped them to become role models to other women. So I realized that education was key if I wanted to do something different with my life. Without these tools, it's very difficult to pursue anything.
And irrespective of the discipline that you study, it still provides such valuable tools to take on other pursuits in your life, even if it's not the 100% direction that you want to be channeled into at that present time?
I think so, because actually a lot of things, and I always tell the young people, and they should listen to this, you're thinking, why in the world am I studying this? I'm never going to use it. Well, it comes at the moment that you less expect it. I think without this legal background that I had, a lot of the negotiations that I have to encounter in my life, the way you speak, the way you communicate, it was very useful. In the economics, the same thing. These tools help me to see a balance sheet and see in my business if things are growing. I could prepare a cash flow and see. I have tools that before, it's just foreign languages if you never study economy. You have a better scope of the world when you are educated.
Thank you for listening to today's special compilation on education. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.